Hi, this is Favi Fav.
And this is Babelito.
And we are
Latinos Who Lunch,
the podcast where we talk about important things like
Naomi Campbell's missing edges.
Hello, hello, hello.
Buenas tardes, everybody.
We are here. We're queer. And we're lunching.
Yes. Get into it.
And we have a very special guest today with us here at Latinos Who Lunch. Our dear friend, our dear art school confidential friend, Lance Smith is here with us.
Hey. Bravo. Hey.
Two snaps in a circle.
Babies, how you doing?
How you doing, Lance?
I'm all right, baby.
Mm-hmm.
Taking it step by step, brick by brick, stone by stone.
Yes. Oh, how are you doing, Babelito?
I'm doing okay. I got a beautiful gift from my friend Catherine in New York. It was this music box with a song by Beirut, and that just gave me a little bit of light, much needed light.
Yeah.
So, hi, Katie, I love you.
You know what I love too?
What do you love?
I was trying to make a segue, but it just was awkward. I love burritos, and you got us some burritos today.
Yes.
I really appreciate you.
I did not get a burrito.
You didn't? I got carne asada. Lance, what'd you get?
Chicken grill. Mm-hmm.
Chicken. And what did you get?
I got a carne asada plate.
Oh, no tortilla, huh?
I'm going to a quinceañera this weekend.
She wants to give you all.
So I got to fit in my...
Okay.
Así es.
No,
plenty of cheese, though.
Did you notice that I put the cheese on the side?
Ooh.
Uh-huh. I am not eating it.
I do notice a little dent out of the rice, so...
Leave me alone.
Okay.
Dog.
Es mi vida, no es tu vida.
What's real up in here, girl?
Lance.
Hey.
Tell us a little bit about yourself, por favor.
Hi, I'm Lance Smith.
Yeah?
I currently am a docent at the Bellagio Gallery of Fine Art.
All right.
When I'm not casting spells and destroying gender norms, I am a fine artist and illustrator here in town.
Awesome.
Yeah, trying to find my way. Getting back on that horse.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, Lance and I went to art school together.
I was gonna ask that.
That's how we met.
Oh girl.
We were both straight art students.
Say that.
This too. The stories I've heard. Gosh.
Missionaries. Team Jesus. Soldiers.
For Christ, honey.
Team Jesus, Soldiers for Christ.
Yeah, baby. Straight and narrow, darling. Sunday school teacher.
Lance was a Sunday school teacher.
Girl.
I didn't know that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was very important to me because I didn't like church. So they were like, watch these badass kids. And I was like, awesome.
So that was a way for you to mm-hmm. push yourself to go to church?
Mm-hmm. And then we could do crafts and drawings. And it was perfect.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. I was like, I don't want to hear your sermon. I don't want to hear you speaking in tongues. Like, let me out. Like, all I had to do was hear the choir, and then they let me out. And I'd be just letting the kids run around. It was awesome.
Mm.
You do have some very deep religious past.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
No, mine was like a very chill Catholic upbringing that didn't affect me a lot.
For me, for a while, it was kind of mandatory. It was like a place. Mm. It was a place where everyone had to act correctly.
Yes,
our household was, you know, sometimes a little crazy. So when everyone went to church, everybody was on the best behavior, and I also loved that.
Okay.
Everybody had to be on. No yelling, no misguided anger. So it was cute.
And where do you grow up? Not in Vegas, right?
No. Culver City.
Okay.
Yeah, I came here when I was 10 years old and my mother passed, and I've been here ever since. So, long time.
10 years. That's, well, you've been here for more than 10 years now, right?
Yeah.
Wow.
So I came here in about 2000.
In Las Vegas.
Yeah, so quite a while.
Yeah, around the same time when I moved here. I moved here in 99 or 98.
See?
Yeah, so we're veterans. Mm-hmm. We're Vegas veterans.
Sure. Veteranas y rucas. So...
So, everybody, Lance is a brilliant draftsman. He is working on a beautiful show, and I'm very excited. When does the show open?
The show will be in January. I want to say the second week of January at the Winchester Cultural Center.
So, everybody, put it in your calendars because it's going to be amazing.
I have to thank Emmanuel for being an angel because it's been a very long time since I've been
interested. His name is Babalito on the show.
Oh, excuse me. Babalito. Better?
Yes. Much better.
All right, Babalito. Babalito?
Babalito.
Babalito.
Oh, you know what? This is a great opportunity to talk about what that means. Where'd you get that name from?
There we go.
Okay, so Babalito, it's from the Tower of Babel, because that's my favorite story from the Bible.
It is very biblical today.
Oh, but my favorite album of all time is by a band in the 90s of rock en español. It's called the Tower of Babel.
Okay.
So there was a period in the 90s where I was obsessed with anything that had to deal with the Tower of Babel, a lot of languages, chaos, and how everything works together within the chaos. And it became my email, my name, my everything, and it still is here today. So that's where I got the Babelito from.
Cool. I like that story.
I do. You look fascinated.
You know, it's because I had a really religious upbringing too. And whenever I hear Bible stories, I just like, my immediate reaction is to shut down. Because like, it was just ingrained into me. We spent like 3 days a week at church. Oof. I was like part of the youth group and all that stuff.
And it was awkward.
Once I didn't have to go to church when I was 18, it was like, to me, really was liberating. And, it did shape the person that I am today, right? Because I was very religious and I did believe in all that stuff. And, but I still have family that's very religious.
Mm-hmm.
So I try to respect that, but at the same time, it's like
it builds community. Too.
It builds community,
which I mean, together. Within the evil, the evil that is the institution and all the any organized religion for that matter. For me, but it builds community. It's important for people, and we must respect it. So.
Yeah,
absolutely. Yeah. You know, and even back on the aspect of Bible verses, I always loved them because they were full of fantasy. You know what I mean? Like, I love, like, Jezebel, like, three-headed dragons.
Yes.
And, like, spiraling staircases with 50 faces. Like, I lived for all that. Revelations was everything to me. I must have known it was all, like, you know, a sham. Excuse me, Grandma. I'm sorry.
I know.
But, you know.
So your love for science fiction comes from the Bible.
Come on now.
Uh-huh. Yeah, that's another thing. Lance is really into science fiction, into comic books.
AKA Aurora Monroe, AKA Storm.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I've been paused. Okay, I'll stop.
No, keep going.
Okay, I love comic books, and they love me.
Oh, that's awesome.
That makes so much sense.
Yeah.
Yes.
More fanciful and just extreme fever dream. Beautiful.
And that's how I got into the Bible, too. It was my period of obsession with rock en español and the weird lyrics and how Catholicism, like, it's always filtrated in the music and the lyrics of rock en español, which nobody cares, but I do. Mm-hmm. And it was the stories. And when we came to Vegas, that was one of the first classes I was able to take. I wanted to take after my electives. I took a history of the Bible.
Wow.
So we read pretty much the whole entire thing in the semester, and it was wonderful. But it was a literature class. It wasn't a religion class or anything like that.
Yeah, I took that. I took the Bible literature class.
Bible is literature class.
At UNLV, and it was amazing. It really opened my eyes to what a. What a great piece of fiction that is.
Yes, true fiction, darling.
Oh, my gosh. But I'm so sorry to all my family listening to this.
No, Grandma,
they hate me right now. No, you're right. You're right. And that's like an inner conflict that I have, that I've had my whole life. You know, it's like I don't want to let my family down. So, like, you know, I'll go to church sometimes if it's a special occasion or, you know, I won't really argue with certain things, just because I don't want to be that person. Because
you respect.
At the family reunions. Absolutely. Yeah, yes. But sometimes I get so angry because, for example, like, one of my cousins graduated, you know, like top of their class, and we had there was a graduation party, and the whole time, you know, some of my family's like very formal, so they're like, okay, now we're gonna say a few words, like a toast almost, you know. There's no alcohol, but we just still, you know. And one of my relatives goes up and he's like, we're gonna give praise and thanks to God for, you know, for I don't want to say names, we're gonna give praise to God for all the hard work that this person has done and because they graduated and da 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 da. And then my cousin gets up and he's like, I just want to thank God for blah, blah, blah. And in my mind, I'm like, how about thank you? Like,
true. Yeah, your effort.
Thank you for all of your work, for getting up every day and putting in the work. How about thanking your mama for buying you all the shit she did.
Mm-hmm. I'm sure taking your dad, like, and sure all of that.
Just to ignore everything and all the people that are all the community that's a part of the process. Correct. It's just like, come on, like it's.
Would you think that for some people maybe God is a community?
Yes,
you know,
absolutely.
The community that they all kind of connect to. It's always this like this weird thing where it's like, you know, all glory to God. People say just, you know, for the aspect of sometimes, you know, them not feeling like there was no other way for them to do it, you know?
Yeah.
And it's odd.
And it's important throughout history. Think about the civil rights movements. What would it be without churches?
I know. I always think about that aspect. I was thinking about the aspect of prayer.
Yes.
You know what I mean? Specifically with black women.
And congregations.
Yes, these congregations, they're like prayer warriors. Mm-hmm. You know, these women, some of them work in hospitals, and they'll pray, you know, even to people that they don't even know, you know. And I know that a lot of people share stories of having a moment in time where they've met someone that's very spiritual and is just willing to kind of give themselves in this weird kind of spiritual way.
Well, you know? We're here for a very specific reason today. And
this is an emergency podcast
So Vavelito and I usually record these ahead of time. Like, we already have 3 episodes basically in the can and they're ready to go. But something happened this week that really affected me and my friends in a big, big way. And I don't know if I've really processed everything that's happened, you know, and I don't really know how to talk about it, but when I...
But we got to be loud.
Yeah, absolutely. We got to be fierce.
But I want to talk about it. I just want to, like, work things out, and so, you know, you're speaking of prayer, and I'm talking about the hate crime.
Mm-hmm. Absolute hate crime.
That just happened in Orlando at Pulse nightclub, where 49 of our brothers and sisters were murdered.
Correct.
Absolutely.
Right. And it really. So you're speaking about prayer, right? So that's another instance when I saw the hashtag. First hashtag that came out was Pray for Orlando, and. Immediately was like, okay, all right, cool. You know, there's a lot of spiritual people, but there's more than prayer. Like, I saw hashtag progress for Orlando. You know, people are aware that we need more than prayer here. Like,
Hashtag do not teach your family and children that being gay is wrong.
Hashtag homophobia is real.
Yeah.
Hashtag write your congressman about gun control.
Hashtag vote.
Yeah. Hashtag, stop these anti-LGBT laws that only really enforce people's hate towards us.
Yeah. Hashtag Muslimophobia, right?
Correct.
Islamophobia.
Pause like, all that. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, so... I remember Babelito and I were sitting in a coffee shop, and people started, right after it happened, right, people started posting all these things on Facebook, and I was really upset, I was really angry. What were your feelings?
I read it, because I was up, I'm up late.
Yeah, me too.
I was up late, and somebody posted something. And I didn't know what to think. And when I woke up and I saw all the posts, mm-hmm. the second I saw the type of language that people started using, I shut down.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I completely shut down. I didn't want to know anything. I didn't want to hear about it mm-hmm. because I couldn't. I was fucking angry, and I'm still very angry. And everybody, it's okay to be pissed off.
Absolutely.
And the first thing I saw, the hashtag prayer, hashtag terrorism, hashtag this. Mm-hmm. I was like, here we go. It's almost like September 11 reprogram mm-hmm. everybody's brain mm-hmm. to a certain specific, very, very specific form of rhetoric mm-hmm. that builds hate.
Yes.
More than any, I mean, at least in my lifetime, I never seen that. And knowing that was going to happen. A friend of mine, instead of putting anything, she said, everybody, I want to let you know that I love you.
Mm-hmm.
I want to let you know that there's a lot of hate, mm-hmm. rhetoric of hate that is happening. So everybody needs to be strong. That was the first post that I saw on social media that made me go, okay, I need to start looking into it. I need to start learning about what happened, because prior to her post, I felt that angry. And this was my friend Annette in New Mexico. Hi, Annette. I love you. Thank you for that post. And knowing that there were people that felt the way I felt, made me really get into it and learn about how many. And it's too much.
It was, I don't really even know how to explain it. I was up late, too, and there's a drag queen from the Parliament House named Darcel Stevens.
Oh, Darcel Stevens. I love her.
Fantastic. She's like your uncle in drag, but amazing. All love.
With tits.
Oh, baby. Down. But she was doing like a live chat, and she was explaining the situation. I kind of sat there because I was like, I just don't know what she's talking about. And
yeah.
then I was reading the aspects of, you know, and she's, you know, people that her friends are like, we're out safe, you know, and literally just realizing, okay, I didn't really pay it too much mind, and then I went to sleep.
Correct.
And then again, it was like you wake up, and it was just like this absolutely gut-wrenching feeling. It was helplessness at first, and then a little bit of anger, and then it was weeping. I get really weepy over this kind of stuff. It was just like, you know, yeah, you just think of this, it's like a ripple. You know, it's like everything is, you know how you guys talk about post-lemonade? All of our queerness is post pulse, you know what I mean? Like everything
yeah.
you deal with will be in the those rose-colored glasses.
And it's so fucking messed up mm-hmm. that he has to come down to that.
Yeah.
That he has to come down to post this, post mm-hmm. that, which... anyway, for me, before I forget, for me was when I Justin was out of the city, out of the state, and I went to pick him up with our friend Michaela. And when I picked him up, he said, "You heard what happened?" I said, "Yes, of course." Again, still blocked, still mm-hmm. not really wanted to feel anything.
Yeah.
And he said, the moment that it clicked for me is when they started reading all the Latino names. And then we went to the coffee shop,
yeah.
and I started reading the name. That's when I just...
Yeah, there was maybe... When you picked me up from the airport, there was like three names released, and they were all Latinos.
Yeah, like four or five, mm-hmm. yeah.
And that's when it clicked for me, yeah, because... Because we were visiting friends in Michigan. Shout out to Shannon and Mark. What
Hola.
Up? Southwestern Michigan College. Shannon, I remember in the morning, looked at me and she said, "Did you hear what happened?" And I did.
Mm-hmm.
I saw it on my feed, but I didn't. You know what the most fucked up thing is? Is we are conditioned already.
Yep.
I'm already conditioned to ignore it.
To mm-hmm. swipe.
So I was just like, oh, another mass shooting. Oh, it happened at a nightclub?
That's exactly what I did.
It happened.
Yeah.
I didn't really... Gay nightclub? And then I just looked at Shannon and I was like, you think it's a hate crime? No, it's probably just random, right? Like,
mm-hmm.
it wasn't a targeted thing, right?
Yeah, because this fucking thing happens every day.
And I just ignored it. I was like, I just hope it's not a real thing. Like, I hope it's not... That's how I dismissed it, like it was nothing.
Yeah, me
you know,
too.
But it's just major gun violence, you know. And for me, it came up like the aspect of a club as sanctuary. You know what I mean? I don't know. We can all maybe share stories.
Oh my gosh.
About being in a gay bar and feeling absolutely transformed, you know, and I just felt violated in the same way that you would think of a church
or
a school.
We were talking about that, like when we were talking about earlier, like a church is a sanctuary for places, right?
Mm-hmm.
Last year, that little white boy walked into that church and killed 9 black people praising God, right?
After sitting through the whole Bible study.
Uh-huh, exactly. Ugh.
And so
I thought when that happened, that really broke my heart. That was like, there's no safe place, right?
And if for anybody out there who doesn't understand this idea of sanctuary, thank your family, thank everybody around you that you don't need to know what to a sanctuary is.
Exactly.
But don't fuck with people that have a sanctuary and don't tell them that it's wrong or what have you.
Yeah, so for a lot of people, church is that place.
Yeah.
For me, I will say my personal experience, like a gay club isn't my sanctuary. It just, and that's has a lot to say with who I am and how I feel about being gay, right? Because something that I've really been thinking about a lot is like my family's very conservative, and I'm not out, like if they ask me about being gay, I talk to them. Like, all my cousins know, you know, like, most of them know. Mm-hmm. Actually, not all of them. But I don't talk about it. And I'm from this school of, like, Juan Gabriel, right? Like, lo que se ve no se pregunta, right? Yeah. Which is fucked up now that I'm thinking about it. And I'm like, why am I so afraid, right? Mm-hmm. And I think that's why I don't like going... Not that I don't like going to gay bars, but it's not my... Oh, you want to say something?
It's a major undertaking, though. Honestly, like, it's not to be taken lightly. You know what I mean? So, honestly, it's fair for you in some ways, you know, because one, just to be honest, a lot of these clubs are not completely inclusive to everyone.
No.
You
know, so especially big girls.
Mm-hmm. Come on. You know, people of color, you know what I mean? Like, you know, so there are certain things that you have to already fight against before you get through to that point, you know?
Yeah.
And so I can't blame you.
Yeah. And so, okay, go ahead.
And also, one thing about gay clubs that, just like church, it's a place where you build your identity.
Absolutely.
When you first come out of the closet,
baby,
that's the first thing you want to do.
Honey, I burnt out.
I was in my teens and I couldn't go to a gay club. I mean, again, I'm a little bit like Justin in that regard. But I remember coming out and we had a coffee shop in town, Mariposa, and that was my sanctuary for 3 weeks.
Yeah.
But I, you know, like, a lot of things happen, but like, thank God for those 3 weeks, because that was the only place I felt safe.
Mm-hmm.
That was the only place I could be myself, because I couldn't even do that in my own home.
Absolutely.
For the first time in the 13, 14 years I grew up with my family.
Mm-hmm.
So these places are absolutely important and essential, regardless if we go to them or not. I mean, I found you guys are in my sanctuary right now,
but
that took a long time for me to build together with my man. So some people need a club, and that's so important. And for something so horrible to happen in a sanctuary.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Lance, will you talk about what's your experience with gay bars, with gay clubs? Like, how did that affect your coming out in your...
Initially, as you know, I went through a fucking Sailor Moon transformation into, like, Kinsey 50 homosexual. Bitch, I mean, like, you couldn't tell me anything. Everything was yes, everything was girl. It was just, you know, the all or nothing for me. I immerse myself in things when I'm interested. I want to dive until I can't breathe and then swim back up. So it was, the club is around the corner from the university. I can walk there and do whatever I feel the need to do, you know, because I was, you know, a little fast. And so, it kind of allotted me to kind of find a stride.
Mm-hmm.
Find a sexuality I kind of denied myself for a very long time.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, I was taught some pretty hardcore lessons, you know, in the aspect of safety, in the aspects of discretion, in the aspects of, you know, being, you know, responsible. I had to learn a lot of responsibility because, you know, these aspects of these clubs is, you know, libations and access. And, you know, I think a lot of the people on the outside see these places as these, you know, free-for-all romper rooms where we're just doing all these deplorable things. But at the same time, they don't really understand that there is a lot of really beautiful things going on there, you know, and that really kind of helped me harness and at the same time kind of calm down my gayness. Yeah, you know, I learned like, oh, well, you know, I go in the club, okay, you're a black girl, you gotta go over there. And at the time, I was, you know, I was bigger, okay, you're a bigger girl, you gotta go over there and over there. You know, so you literally learn to navigate, you know what I mean? You learn what guys you go for, what guys are not having it, you know, so it's a trip.
Stratification, just like everywhere else,
Yeah, I think that's why I like that club when there was here, Drink and Drag. Mm-hmm. Just because, like, drag queens, I think, are, like, are I don't want to say the biggest freaks, but, you know, like,
absolutely.
Like there's a lot of gay guys that I know that are afraid of drag queens because mm-hmm. they're confronted with gender.
Yeah, and with their own reality.
And they're confronted with their own reality. And a lot of gay guys have this idea of, like, oh, I'm gay, but I'm masculine.
Yeah.
You know, at the same time, like I don't have faggy hands, and I don't talk with a lisp, and whatever.
A purse doesn't fall out of my mouth every time I say something.
Uh huh. So I think that's why I fell in love with drag queens too, because they don't give a fuck.
Yes.
Right. And they, and they're really making people think about sexuality, mm-hmm. about gender, and about, you know, it just points out the patriarchy, which is very real.
Yes.
And homophobia is very real. Like,
correct.
Within the gay community, which is really sad, but it's true.
So true.
And, but also, that's why it's important for you, that's why it's important to you to come out to your family or mm-hmm. come out to your best friends, because, you know, I talked to you guys before the show. I don't want to mention the person that went in there and took these lives. There's no need. Mm-hmm. Like,
absolutely none.
The white media is already...
This is not about him.
Yeah, they're already making it about him, so we don't need to do that. Like, he's already getting enough airtime, and mm-hmm. his... Oh, oof.
Yeah. Speaking of the media, can I say something really good?
Yeah, say it.
The aspect of the media, you know, I get it. You know, this attack happened to our whole community, but you have to understand that this was a targeted attack on brown people, you know?
Amen.
Latinos mm-hmm. and Latinas. And so when I go on the television, I see people weeping, and I see these white faces, and then I see, like you all saw, the names. I'm like, hold up. This don't add up. It's like, how are you not talking about the aspect, a real aspect of now, you know, a community that's going to mourn and, you know, have to deal with all these things, but yet and still you're able to kind of put this filter of whiteness over it, so maybe it's more palatable for people, to, you know, to really kind of sympathize, you know what I mean, at the beginning? I don't know.
It has to fit under...
Or using fear as a political tool, right?
Yeah. Absolutely.
Making it about something else. Because, you know,
right now with this election year,
girl,
so true.
Yeah, but it's also, again, I always come back to it, but it's that rhetoric of 9/11.
Mm-hmm.
It'll hit. I mean, last week, people were afraid of transgender people, you know, and now everybody's interested
people are saying pray.
Yes.
And it's like, no.
But that's the way that media can convince them mm-hmm. that what's happening, it's an act of terrorism. Therefore, we have to vote for this and that so we can get money.
Absolutely.
And keep getting the flow of guns mm-hmm. and everything continues the same place. And then the people up there with all the money that are controlling that, nothing's going to change.
Yeah, you know, the real kind of gag is, I was doing a little research, and Smith and Wesson, the gun company, a lot of people started buying more guns as soon as this tragedy happened. And
every
it's a trend.
Time.
Every single time there's a mass shooting, people buy more guns. It's
what
sick.
Happened after 9/11, right? Didn't George Bush encourage people to go out
to go shopping? Mm-hmm. Yeah, like my aunt. Like, I remember talking to my aunt and say, I like our president because, you know, like, we need to do this. We need to not be afraid and go shopping. And I'm like, is that really?
Yeah.
Is
oh,
that
we need
really
to go shopping now.
Yes,
no,
yeah.
Not really. It's,
that's why I bought a Hummer, girl.
Stupid.
With the subject of guns, 9 senators, for example, alone so right now have received over $22 million from the NRA. So that goes to tell you how this violence circling. When I say violence, I mean violence in all its extent, absolutely. Not just physical, but historical, racial, everything. And
but how do you even okay, so the aspect of gun violence, how do you quote unquote put the cat back in the bag when people buy these guns in bulk like they're Costco, you know what I mean? And the whole aspect of these gun reforms, the I guess the right wing people are afraid that they're going to come into your homes and take your guns. But, you know, there's always this promise because of our amendments that that'll never happen. So it's like, okay, we get these reforms which need to happen. So then, but there's the access of guns. You know, there's you know, literature saying that there's a gun for every man, woman, and child in America.
It's gross.
You know what I mean? They're there. Like, that's a scary thing for me.
I don't know a lot about guns. Like, I don't know what kind of gun was used in this. I was having a conversation with a very conservative person at a get-together just a couple days ago. Mm-hmm. And much to my surprise, when I walked out of this get-together, mm-hmm. I saw this person's car, and they had Trump stickers on there and everything. And I had no idea. Yes. But we had a serious conversation about guns, mm-hmm. because he believes we should be able to have guns if we want, right? And I said, sure, fine. You have 4 guns in your house.
Correct.
1 for every room. I don't know why the fuck you would have 4 guns. Mm-hmm. But I have family, right? So. I have family. I have an uncle who has a mini market. Shout out to El Porvenir Mini Market in Northtown. He needs to protect himself. He needs to protect his business. I understand, right? He has a pistol, right? Or a handgun. See, I don't even know. Okay. He doesn't have a fucking machine gun, fucking army. I don't know what
Rambo
is. Is this Rambo? Like, what the fuck do you need that?
Semi-automatic weapons.
Fully automatic, semi-automatic, whatever automatic. You don't need it to be shooting. It looked like it. What is this? Like fucking. What's that Nintendo video game?
Duck.
No, not Duck.
Sorry, girl. I'm old school.
What is this fucking Contra? Like, why do you need? What do you need that fucking rifle for,
girl? Don't act like you. There is that fantasy, that American fantasy of being able to use that gun on some evil criminal, and you like blowing them away. Like, it's romanticized through our video games.
How about
games?
You just get a fucking handgun and learn how to shoot it, yeah. Right? Annie Oakley style.
All right.
You need one fucking bullet, and they're done. Like, why don't you learn how to use a fucking weapon? And I don't know. See, this is where I'm wrong. Whatever I'm saying is wrong because I don't know about guns. But
yeah.
Single argument about gun, my brain cannot process it.
I need more burrito.
Go ahead, okay. Go for it. My brain cannot process it because somebody's like, oh, well, we're not crazy and we want to do it for the sport. It's like, or for hunting. Or
the
like,
potential.
Whatever you say about it, whatever argument you tell me about guns, from the smallest one to the biggest one, it doesn't matter. It's not worth 50 people in a gay club. It's not worth 22 people in an elementary school. Mm-hmm. It's not worth as many people as died every single day, especially in our neighborhoods, you know? Especially in our fucking neighborhoods.
Absolutely.
It is not worth the glamour. It is not worth the sport. It is not worth the skins. Nothing. Absolutely nothing. I cannot comprehend. I've gone so far left on that idea that I cannot comprehend even the shape of it. Like, it doesn't make sense
at
all.
I've never been interested in guns whatsoever.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I find them too end-all, be-all. You know what I mean? Because they hold that potential to, you know.
My uncle took me out shooting once. I shot the gun once, and I gave the gun back to him, and I said, I cannot.
Never again.
I cannot ever do that again. He looked at me like I was fucking crazy. I was like, that was, I just used something that could kill somebody instantly.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
When I felt that, I'm just going to say, when I felt that power, you know, I was like, this is not for me. Mm-hmm. Like, and that's another thing, like, to use a weapon like that, and to not have to have any sort of training to buy something that can do that,
yeah,
true. That fucking blows my mind. So, yeah, that's the only time I've done it, and I probably won't again.
I've never done it, and I will never.
Anyway, I want to go back to what I was talking about before, about, you know, there was a debate, right? We got into it already a little here. Like, was this an act of terrorism? Afghans. Fucking Trump said Afghans. Like, that's a fucking place. Like, anyway, is this an act of terrorism? Is this a hate crime? Like, why is that even a fucking question?
Exactly.
Yeah.
People are dead.
A gay club on Latin night?
Yeah.
Yeah. It was a very specific.
Very, very specific.
Yeah. Oh. Hate crime. And going back to homophobia, right? Like, it's time to be visible. It's time to be loud.
Absolutely.
And it's time to talk about this kind of stuff with the people you love. Mm-hmm. Because if you know, some of the people that died,
their families may not have even known that they were. They might have,
you know what I mean? And also
wasn't there a case of one victim that the family didn't know that one of them was gay and find out after?
Probably.
Like, yeah, that's so heartbreaking.
Yeah.
Yeah. And, anyway, the point I'm trying to make is if, you know, if a family member knows that you're gay, right?
Like, reach out.
Next time they think about a gay person or they encounter a gay person, you know, oh, this guy is like my nephew, this guy is like my cousin, this person is just like my uncle, right?
Mm-hmm.
And you have more compassion towards these people. Imagine if the shooter was raised to think that gay people were fine, right?
Yeah.
If he had a gay cousin, if he had a gay uncle,
true,
that he loved, right?
Mm-hmm.
That wouldn't have happened, correct, right? Because homophobia is based on fear. This entire thing is about fear,
yes,
right? And because this person was so scared about what they didn't know about
themselves,
yeah, right? They wanted to put fear into everybody's heart. And, you know, that's what really bothered me was I was one of my guilty pleasures. I know, I'm sorry, as I love to watch The View, like After The View on YouTube. But they had an After The View after Monday's episode about this. And they were talking about, like, if I go to another country, I can be killed for just being myself.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Right? That's scary. And that's happening in our own country right now.
There's 10 countries in the world,
yeah,
where homosexuality may be punished by death, and about 77 countries where it's illegal to be gay. So this is a problem. This reflects a worldwide problem that, mm-hmm, just because we can get married here in the first world, and I hate to separate the first, the second, and the third world, but just for lack of better word, just because we can get married here in the first world doesn't mean that the rest of the world is suffering. Mm-hmm. Correct.
You know, and I think one of the big things that I'm noticing here is people's reaction, specifically queer people, is that you are feeling like you feel connected in some way, in this weird kind of sad way, because you know that the kind of pain that, you know, your brothers and sisters are going through, you know, it reflects on you. A lot of people I've talked to said it could have been me, you know what I mean? Like, these aspects,
yes,
you know what I mean? Of, you know, us all being in these spaces, you know, and, you know, even down to some of the people that were slain, was a mother celebrating with her son. You know what I mean? You know what I mean?
Like, yeah, that was a straight ally to,
yeah, things, so exactly. So, you know, so,
yeah,
you know, it really just kind of sends this,
yeah,
crazy message.
Yeah. So I want to take a moment now and read the names of the 49 victims, if that's okay with you guys.
Mm-hmm. Please.
And, just to give them a moment in our podcast, and I think it just makes it real, right? Because a lot of the times these tragedies happen and people just focus on the number, right? Mm-hmm. And the spectacle of it. But these were all real people, like you said, mothers, fathers, daughters, brothers, sisters, right?
Yes.
Okay, so I think this list is in alphabetical order. Stanley Almodovar III, 23 years old.
Amanda Avayar, 25 years old.
Oscar A. Aracena Montero, 26 years old.
Rodolfo Ayala, 33 years old.
Antonio Devon Brown, 29 years old.
Daryl Roman Bird II, 29 years old.
Angel L. Candelario Padro, 28 years old.
Juan Chavez Martinez, 25 years old.
Luis Daniel Conde, 39 years old.
Corey James Connell, 21 years old.
Tevin Eugene Crosby, 25 years old.
Dianca Deidra Drayton, 32 years old.
Simon Adrian Carrillo Fernandez, 31 years old.
Leroy Valentin Fernandez, 25 years old.
Mercedes Marisol Flores, 26 years old.
Peter O. Gonzalez Cruz, 22 years old.
Juan Ramon Guerrero, 22 years old.
Paul Terrell Henry, 41 years old.
Frank Hernandez, 27 years old.
Miguel Angel Honorato, 30 years old.
Javier Jorge Reyes, 40 years old.
Jason Benjamin Josephat, 19 years old.
Eddie Jameljoy Justice, 30 years old.
Anthony Luis Laureano Dicia, 25 years old.
Christopher Andrew Leononen, 32 years old.
Alejandro Barrios Martinez, 21 years old.
Brenda Lee Marquez McCall, 49 years old.
Gilberto Ramon Silva Mendez, 25 years old.
Kimberly Morris, 37 years old.
Akira Monet Murray, 18 years old.
Luis Omar Ocasio Capo, 20 years old.
Geraldo A. Ortiz Jimenez, 25 years old.
Eric Ivan Ortiz Rivera, 36 years old.
Joel Rayon Paniagua, 32 years old.
Jean Carlos Mendez Perez, 35 years old.
Enrique L. Rios Jr., 25 years old.
Jean C. Nieves Rodriguez, 27 years old.
Xavier Emmanuel Serrano Rosado, 35 years old.
Christopher Joseph Sanfeliz, 24 years old.
Ilmari Rodriguez Sullivan, 24 years old.
Edward Sotomayor Jr., 34 years old.
Shane Evan Tomlinson, 33 years old.
Martin Benitez Torres, 33 years old.
Jonathan Antonio Camoy Vega, 24 years old.
Juan P. Rivera Velasquez, 37 years old.
Luis S. Vielma, 22 years old.
Frankie Jimmy De Jesus Velasquez, 50 years old.
Luis Daniel Wilson Leon, 37 years old.
Gerald Arthur Wright, 31 years old. That was a lot.
Yeah. But I am glad that we were able to say their names and show respect for the lives that were lost.
Yeah, it
it's a trip. You know, when you go through these lists, and if you actually get a chance to go through these lists and read a little about these people, it gets heavier and heavier every time you read it. It's like it doesn't get lighter.
No.
It is absolutely more. Not. It becomes more and more real, and this your pain will kind of blip you in different places every time you go through.
Yeah, it's a deep sadness for me, and it's also I just feel this helplessness, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. because what are we gonna do?
Yeah,
what can we do?
Next?
What comes next, right? And you know, I actually just saw a RuPaul interview. He was on Access Hollywood,
mm-hmm.
and he's like, "This is our moment to be loud, right?
Absolutely. Yes.
To be loud, to be heard, and to make sure people know that we exist and that what happens matters, right? Because it's already being swept under the rug."
Yeah.
Oh, yeah,
and it's kind of hinting at the aspect that we as a people are disposable, which we are not.
Right.
And this is just a reminder of the daily dangers that we live in.
Yeah.
I remember when I first came out, my family's, some of their biggest things was, you be safe.
My.
You know, they were always like, watch where you're going, make sure you're, you know, they always feared for me. And sometimes I had no idea and I was oblivious. But these kinds of situations really brings back the idea that the heterosexual people that love you are fully aware of how dangerous it is for you just to be yourself.
And it's almost like a stigma that mm-hmm. that a lot of straight people think about gay people, mm-hmm. and it shouldn't be like that. And this is a reminder that many times it is like that. The same thing happened to me, Lance. Like when I come out of the closet, my family's like, "But you're not gonna be happy."
Mm-hmm.
Like, but you're there's people that want to hurt you.
Yeah, people that want to.
And
kill
I
you.
Just remember thinking as a teenager, like, "Fuck off!" Like, mm-hmm. what? You know, I'm gonna do my thing.
Absolutely.
And this is a reminder that this. They were saying that for a reason, and it shouldn't mm-hmm. be like that.
No.
And for people that are wondering how to help, as you say, Justin, like,
yeah.
be loud. Like, start these conversations. Reach out to those people in your family that are struggling coming out.
Absolutely.
Or that just have come out. And it's important to have that conversation. And I want to say this. In the Latino community, in the Latino families, jokes about being gay, joto, maricón, this and that, it's taken in such a light way that it's never seemed like it's damaging.
Yeah.
And it's very common in the in the dinner table. Mm. I live it. I still live it. And I'm able we grow thick skin and we just turn it out.
It's great. Like when one of my family members in particular is very homophobic and makes really offensive comments, and I just shut down.
Like, yeah.
The past time I hung out with this person for a while, it took everything I had to say, why are you saying that?
Yeah.
Why are you using that word? You're using hate speech, like I told him that, right?
Mm-hmm.
And that was all I could muster, like instead of like reading him down, right? Like, which I wanted to.
Yeah.
Like, I hate that feeling and I still get it. Like, I just shut down, and I feel I'm making a
Princess in the Pea?
Princess in the Pea hand motion. I feel this small. You know what I mean? And I hate feeling that way. And I'm too grown for that. I'm not gonna feel that way anymore.
Go ahead. I'm kind of the opposite. You know me.
I do know you.
You know, it's, you know, I don't know. You know, it's there's something to be said, you know, about the being courageous enough to live the life that we live. And the aspect of someone trying to make me feel less than, I don't take kindly to that. You know, it's, you know, I'm very quick to let you know about yourself. Because at the same time, just like you said, all the gay slurs that they use to try and be funny, they don't have a problem coming at us. So please believe, I'm going to come at you full throttle.
And that's the justification that a lot of people use. It's comedy. It's light. Like, it's okay.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's part of the justification that this is a joke, that when we sit together at the dinner table, especially, I don't know, like it happens so much in both in my distant and my immediate family, that it's okay, that it makes it okay to bring the sort of hate speech, because it is when you use the words that you use in order to make a joke. And this is when comedy gets a little bit iffy for me, especially when it comes down to how it's used in my family, because I remember cringing. I remember being 11, 12 years old, right before coming out of the closet, because I came out really early. And
I can't even imagine.
And no. I remember thinking, like, whoa, I'm about to come out, and this is happening. Like, oh, shit, should I not come out? Because of the jokes, mm-hmm. the innocent jokes that could potentially fill the head of somebody, like the person
turn to anger.
Exactly.
And it's crazy how many people that are actually okay with gay people make gay jokes because it's part of the culture.
Correct.
Mm. Like I remember a lot, like when I was younger, logging that information, mm-hmm. like, oh, this friend says the word faggot, or
me
this.
Me too. I think we all do. Yes.
Mm-hmm. Oh, you know what? Can I say something really quick?
Please say
to
it.
Any of my younger cousins that are listening to this.
Uh-oh.
I'm sure they're not, because you know they're too busy not
giving a shit,
not giving a shit, and not communicating verbally. Mm-hmm. But this hashtag no homo bullshit.
Oh, like, girl. I've been reading my nephews for that for years.
That is so... Okay, so one of my cousins just had a birthday. I have so many fucking cousins. So many problems. So he just had a birthday, and it was so sweet. Like, he had the Snapchat story, like, of his good friend. His best friends, right? He has two best friends. They're always hanging out. Church buddies, whatever. And he wrote this really beautiful message on Instagram, mm-hmm. after, and it was like, you know, this goes out to my boy, whatever, you know, he's been my best friend for this many years, you know, I love you.
Hashtag no homo.
And then at the end, hashtag no homo.
Yes. Yeah.
How about just like, hey, I love you, and that's cool, like, we can love each other.
Yeah.
Like, you don't have to add a homophobic mm-hmm. fucking slur at the end, because that's what no homo is.
Yeah,
like
it's our society.
Not like a slur, but that's just what it is.
The mm-hmm. aspect of male on male love is seen as this big taboo, and then you always have to preface it with like no homo.
Yeah,
you know what I mean, as a way to expunge yourself of any kind of gayness.
Yeah,
it's almost like a quick eraser for faggotry. Excuse me.
Faggotry. You can say it on this podcast. It's okay.
Mm-hmm. Faggotry.
How do you feel?
I feel good.
That's funny.
Yeah, and I think that people ask, well, what can we do? I don't... Again, people... Victims don't need your prayers.
Say that.
That ain't gonna do shit.
No.
People need for them to build a legacy, for us to build a legacy for them. That's what I'm trying to say.
Yeah.
Again, write your congressman, reach out to a gay person in your family, your friends, stop with the fucking hashtags, stop with all these jokes, and like, I don't know, this is one of the things that I think that will substitute the prayers for actual actions.
Yeah.
I don't know.
And I think in some ways, take us more seriously. I think oftentimes, like, the aspects of our sexuality, even though they're serious in a way that they can be damaging and dangerous, but a lot of the times, you know, we're your purses, we're your accessories. You know, that's something that really boils my mind.
And that's a big problem in Latin America. The figures in pop culture in Latin America, mm-hmm. that are gay, a lot of them. I mean, things are changing, of course, it's like we're clowns.
Yeah, and it's so like, you know, clowns to the slaughter. You know, some people can probably have that thought when we think about this aspect of a massacre, like a horrible killing in our country. You know, and I think, like you said, build up that legacy of knowing that it's okay for people to be different. You know, mm-hmm. you say talk to your congressman, talk to your damn children.
Exactly.
Inform them that it's not okay for them to belittle and dehumanize people.
Anybody.
You know what I mean?
Anybody.
And I think it's funny now because a lot of people get all in their feelings because everything's so PC and there's a term for everything. But the aspect of hate speech, how you said that a couple of times, that is how we reclaim our humanity. If we don't have a verb for you,
right.
Mm-hmm.
then you won't be able to recognize it. But if we give you, this is what this is, let me put a name to it, you know what I mean? Then you have to confront it differently. You don't get to do it without any kind of, there's no cause or effect there.
Yeah.
I'm glad you said that. I'm glad you said this idea of choosing your battles. Mm-hmm. Because the conversation about gender and race in this country, because of social media, has gotten so convoluted that, as you said, everything is so safe to the point that people cannot express themselves.
No.
But I think that's in many instances, of course, we have to recognize people's humanities and many, many things. But also we have to choose our battles because we miss the big picture when we complain about the little things. Sitting down in your Facebook, in the computer, and complaining about 1,000 little things all day is missing the big picture. And the big man up there, it's still doing damage.
Exactly.
And nothing is fucking changing.
Absolutely. You know, and it's, and oftentimes, not to be shady, but it seems like busy work for some people, like to kind of find all of these different things to complain about. When, like you just said, the big issues are not being attacked.
Correct.
You know, it's not like we're forming Voltron and we're getting all these pieces and we're coming as one big robot. We're taking the parts and throwing them away. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And then making it harder for each of us to connect because you're this and I'm that. Oh, but no, actually, on Tuesdays I'm this, so I need you to call me this.
That's
other story.
Okay. This is another point that I've talked about on this podcast before, and I'll say it again. I have a big issue with like Facebook and Google and now even Instagram with these algorithms that are happening on all these social media platforms. Like they're taking into account what you like, and then they're also letting you unfollow people so that you can still be their friend on these accounts,
but
you don't see their feed or hear them. At first, I thought, brilliant. I don't have to listen to bullshit or read about bullshit or see another fucking racist comment. But the more I started filtering people on my Facebook, the more I realized that I'm just closing myself on from the real.
You're making yourself
a bubble from the real world. So like, I was just looking at all my posts. I'm like, what? Why is everything about, you know, Bernie Sanders, Hillary, and you know, Trump hate and drag queens, right? So it's like, it's just like things that. So it's like. It's like a fucking NPR ad, right, on my on my feed, and I'm not really hearing the voices of the right, right, or whatever, you know, like it's good to know what other people are thinking, right? Because then we're on our own damn bubbles, and we don't know what's really happening in the world, and we step outside,
and you
and
create
just
monsters.
Yeah,
yes.
I'll say this. This is from my father, Mark Burns.
Yeah.
He always tells me, know your enemy. Always tells me that the aspect of being able to go to that other side and know what they're thinking about you, know what things are making them upset, because if you don't know, then you in some ways make yourself a target.
Yeah,
correct.
Precisely.
And it's also about erasure.
Oh,
it's
baby.
It's about erasing
cultural smudging.
Oh, baby.
Yes.
Copyright Azalea Banks.
Correct. Yes.
problematic fave. I love you, baby.
Problematic
on, baby.
Fave.
Get
to the
through
end.
It, baby.
Yeah, and you know, going back to what we were talking about before with what happened at
Orlando.
We gotta make sure that we don't get lost and we don't get erased, right?
Yeah.
So we need to make sure our voices are heard.
And not get lost in the noise too.
And not get lost in the noise. And people, please, please be aware that a lot of what you're hearing on the news is masking.
Yeah, it ain't the true tea.
Exactly.
I'm gonna replicate what my friend Annette said. Like, buckle up. because the anti-Muslim, the homophobic rhetoric, the post 9/11 rhetoric, it's only gonna get louder and louder, mm-hmm. and we gotta be prepared.
Mm-hmm.
That's all.
You know, and for me, I just want to tell everyone to love each other. You know, it's not easy for everyone. You know, but find, you know, people that are like you. Go to your local centers. Volunteer if you can. The thing about this whole thing is that this is a trauma. And trauma oftentimes requires you to be able to talk to someone, a third party, an impartial third party, or someone that understands. So if you feel unhinged, if you feel you are lost, please find a friend.
Reach out.
Like, don't do it alone, because this whole thing, we can't do this alone. You know, we can't stand as a unified front alone, you know?
Yeah. Right. Man, well.
Baby.
So I think we can, now we can talk about our recommendations.
Yeah, so every episode we like to give out some shout outs to different things. Usually I shout out
from the mountaintop.
Oh, yell it on them. I don't know. Okay. So I usually suggest some podcasts to listen to, and along the same topics, based on the episode, and today we talked about a lot. A podcast that I've listened to time and time again is actually from a very familiar podcast that really is one of the most popular ones. It's called Radiolab. Have you ever heard Radiolab?
Yes,
fantastic.
It's
so good.
Awesome. But there was one that came out earlier this year called Debatable. Mm-hmm. And I'm not going to say much because I don't want to give too much away, but it's about the high school college debate system and the people. Mm. Did you hear that one?
I cried.
Oh my gosh. I cried. Every time I listen to it, I do.
I can't do that.
So powerful.
Yeah.
And I'm so happy for that piece of of audio is out there. So Radiolab, Debatable. For the longest time, I've been listening to this podcast called Throwing Shade, and I will admit that I stopped listening to it for a while because it was too white for me. I'm so sorry.
You have to curate the things you
I'm
hear.
So sorry. Yeah, I'm sorry. I know. I'm like, am I being racist right now? I don't relate to these people.
No.
Right? But something about the show now, I started listening to it again. It's a gay guy and a lady, right?
Mm-hmm.
And they talk about things that are important to ladies and gays, mm-hmm. right? But I feel like now they're just so comfortable with their show,
mm-hmm.
and I'm pretty sure since they're white, they're gonna have a TV show and merch, and mm-hmm. you know, there's already a Throwing Shade movie coming out.
Oh, girl!
But they're still amazing.
No, let me pause you there. Okay, so you want to talk about the aspect of the eraser on the back of the pencil that they use on us? Where did Throwing Shade come from?
Oh, that came from the gay community.
Yes.
From the black,
the library.
Underground, mm-hmm. trans, dark community.
People of color. Black, Latin people of color in the ballroom scene. I know most of you queens have already watched Paris is Burning and memorized it, and it's cute. I'm glad that, you know, that's cute. But just always know your source material. You know what I mean? Like,
right.
pay homage.
Yeah, and they do. I will give them that.
All right, as long as they
do. They know what's up.
Because ain't nothing boils my blood, baby. Like unsolicited.
Like
rocks.
When people were saying bye, Felicia, and they didn't know where Felicia came from.
Dog. I have never in my life, it's like they're like fighting words.
Okay, you're gonna have to come back because we gotta end this shit.
Okay, sorry.
So what was I saying? Okay, Throwing Shade, the latest episode of Throwing Shade, they talk about the massacre that happened in Orlando, and they also the first section of that podcast,
Radiolab.
I think it came out yesterday, is really good. And Radiolab Debatable, Netflix recommendation I have, since we're talking about homophobia and masculinity, there's this really great documentary called the mask we live with,
right.
I think. And it's interviews with all these kids to adults about what they about the mask, about being masculine, and how they have to play this role in America, yeah. Right? Anyway, those are my recommendations.
I have some, but I want to finish with a little piece that I want to read. So I know Lance has a recommendation too.
Okay. So recommendations podcast recommendations, darling. There's one podcast that I listen to currently. I don't know if you've brought it up before. It's kind of like my bread and butter. It's called The Black Guy Who Tips.
Oh yeah, we haven't talked about him yet. This is great.
Okay, so Rod and Karen. Oh my God, I love you so much.
She's like my auntie.
Oh, isn't she? My God. All I'm going to say is that, okay, I have a beautiful boyfriend. He happens to be white. So there's a lot of times where I don't feel this immense connection to black people. Mm-hmm. And the thing about the black guy who tips is that they're so inclusive.
Yeah.
There are a heterosexual black married couple who live in North Carolina. But they are fantastic. They're a constant light. And they are on top of everything. They talked about the massacre. They keep you all updated. So if you're ever looking for something kind of fun that's geared towards and kind of for black people, and you this unapologetic, but at the same time very smart and witty, I would totally suggest that.
Yes, Black Guy Who Tips.
Yeah, that's good. Fantastic podcast. And you need to pronounce the name of this artist because I can never pronounce it correctly. This musical artist. Anoni?
Yeah, I think so.
Okay, Anoni is a trans artist.
Formerly known as...
From Anthony and the Johnsons. The new album is called...
Hopelessness.
It's quite possibly one of the most ethereal and otherworldly albums I've heard in the last 10 years. It's pretty fantastic. If you want to feel, I don't know, the darkness and just like the humanity of just being in this fucked up world, I highly suggest you get on that album. But please be sure you take your Prozac, bitch, because it's going to take you through it.
Yes.
Oh, God.
And continuing in the line of music, I wanted to give a couple of recommendations of queer Latino artists that are really doing something. There's a great article in Remezcla about it, but there's one artist in this article that I don't talk about, and I'm going to mention three. First one, Puerto Rican artist, Alegría Rampante, which has a little bit of Rufus Wainwright, a little bit of Morrissey, wonderful stuff.
Say the name again.
So dramatic. His name is Alegría Rampante.
Okay.
Yes. The second one is this band, this electro gay 70s awesome disco band from Mexico called Zemoa. They're doing a lot of noise. And these are unapologetic gay Latino music that when you listen to it, they will destroy all the stereotypes, and it's just wonderful. And the third one of my absolutely favorite artists out there, queer artists in Latin America, his name is Alex Anwanter.
Oh, I thought you were going to say Ricky Martin. Damn.
Never. What would you say never for?
No, I'm just playing. Say it again. Say the name again.
Your bomb.
Alex Anwanter. And uh-huh. His new album came out in April 2nd. It's called Manifiesto. And I wanted to close the episode just reading a little bit from the song because okay. it really touches upon what we've been talking about today and also what happened. So I will put the translation of the lyrics as well on the website. So, okay, there it goes. Mis sentimientos junto a lo más urgente. Que no creo en Dios ni en nada de esto. Yo quiero ser un manifiesto. Hecho cuerpo sin un cuerpo que va a disparar. Y entiendo toda tu violencia. Que, niño mío, no es ciencia. Que lo justo no es normal. Defiéndete no más. Hoy soy mujer. Hoy soy mujer. El maricón del pueblo. Aunque me prendan fuego, mis sentimientos, aunque me prendan fuego. And with that, I think there's something else, if not.
Thank you guys so much for listening. You can follow me at Favi Fav on all social media platforms.
Mabelito in Instagram, and only Instagram, and forever Instagram.
Lance Smith Art on Instagram. Come on, find me, baby.
And you can find us at Latinos Who Lunch on Instagram and Twitter and Facebook and all that good stuff. And make sure to rate and subscribe on iTunes. It's really important, guys.
Only 5-star ratings.
Only 5-star ratings. Only 5 stars. And special thanks to our friend Ed.
Our friend Ed Frias.
Yeah.
Edward Frias.
Edward.
Yes, he's the one who let us borrow the equipment in the first episode, and this is an emergency episode. Text them, and boom. So if you hear my dog, my bird, my cat, my boyfriend, that's because it was an emergency podcast.
All right. Everybody say love.
Love.
Everybody say love.
Love. I love, love, love.
Amor, 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 amor. Love, 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 baby. Lance.
Thank you guys for having me. Truly, truly honored to be here, and y'all keep doing what you're doing, because there is something to be said, and you were doing it beautifully.
Love you guys.
Bye-bye.
Bye.